The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International. Next, Rebecca Lyons describes her difficult journey from despair to a life of meaning.
And I don't know that I would have reached the desperation for God in Atlanta or in the South or in the comfort that I knew. I call myself a Christian, you know, since I was five. I asked Christ into my life and my heart, but I never had known like what it meant to just utterly depend on Him for survival.
The terrifying freefall that eventually led to flight.
Today. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Betty, and this is James.
And you know, I'm just sitting here holding this book, Free Fall to Fly. Interesting title. I'm going to ask how she came up with that. Rebecca Lyons wrote it. Her husband, Gabe, you know, we kind of go back to where I was very good friends of Liberty Leadership with Dr. Falwell and, of course, some of the boys, Jonathan and Jerry Jr., who's the president of now the largest Christian university in the world. We go back and we've been through a lot, watching a lot, and what's happened with Gabe, of God stretching him, is a lot like what's happening at Liberty. Just the love of God, just extending His arms out to say, you know, we want everybody to know and love the Lord and be a family. And Gabe and Rebecca really are an incredibly gifted young team couple. But probably Gabe was moving on, and Rebecca's got some things going on in her life that could have cost her life. I mean, it was becoming like an existence, and she'd seen some things happen with her dad and things that she'd said, this has gotten me. But she really found a breathtaking journey toward a life of meaning. Hmm. And I'm really anxious for you to hear her story. Would you welcome Rebecca Lyons to Life Today? Well, a mother of three,
yes.
Kids moving into their teens. You said your eight-year-old already is convinced she's a teen already.
My oldest son is 13, and my daughter, she's eight, but yes.
She's there already in her
she
mind.
She thinks she's a teenager.
Absolutely.
She's in charge of the boys.
Okay. I gotta know about this title,
yes.
Free Fall to Fly.
Sure. Well, you can't fly. It takes a free fall to teach us how to fly. That's what I learned. And so I looked at New York as I was like standing on the edge of this vast expanse, and he's just saying, just leap. And I think the question I kept asking at the beginning, well, who will catch me if I fall? Because risk and the unknown and the fear that that all created, I thought New York was going to be meaning. And it turns out I found surrender. And I learned that meaning comes after surrender. So I never thought I'd write a book. It really just chronicles the last few years of my life. I lived in Atlanta, and we had our babies there. We lived there for 13 years. We started our nonprofit, Q Ideas, there. Gabe was the antagonist in my life that just would skip out the door and run towards his calling, and I'd be, you know, cleaning up Cheerios and doing laundry. And my life as a mother really began at 26 when my firstborn son, Cade, who's now 13, was born with Down syndrome. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know until the day he was born. It was 6 hours after the doctor came in and said, we see signs of Down syndrome in your baby. And he was 4.5 pounds at that time. He was full term, but basically failure to thrive. He was on a respirator, breathing tube. I didn't even get to hold him. And the next morning I went in and looked at him, and he basically just wired up, and I finally got to just feel him and hold him, and he just basically said, are you going to love me? Like, his eyes just looked at me like, are you going to love me for me? Not for what I can do or what I can accomplish or what milestones I can meet that make you think you're a good mom. Because I'd grown up in a performance-based culture where I was affirmed and felt loved by what I did. And my entree to motherhood just taught me something vastly different very quickly. And so that fast forwarded, and then within the next few years, we started Q. I made my way into life as a new mom. I had a job at North Point Community Church. I was running some things, but then all the therapies for Cade got so much that I came home full time. And towards the end of our time in Atlanta, I just felt this sense, this stirring, like, is there something more, God? Have you called me? You've given me, you've stewarded these children. You've entrusted them to me for the time that I can train them up in the way they should go. And you've brought a man into my life that has, you know, we have got to walk together as a team. But are there certain assignments that are for me alone that you knit? Like, are there giftings and wirings you put when you knit me in my mother's womb, things that make my heart sing, things that make me come alive? And then also, what kind of journey might that look like? So right around the same time, Gabe felt this pull to come to New York, and he taught at a church, Trinity Grace, all on cultural renewal. And so this was in 2007, and we started Q, and John Tyson had invited him to come, so he spoke that morning on the Upper West and in Chelsea. And by the end of that night, he's like, can you imagine living here? I said, no. Because New York, to me, was like, this is where he knelt on bent knee and asked me to marry him at the 102nd floor of the Empire State Building. We'd met at Liberty. We were just like, to me, New York was like a fantastical city of lights, not laundry and, you know, cleaning and paying bills. I didn't even know, like, do people actually live here and where do they live? Because I didn't see any kids in Times Square. And then I learned there's a whole residential side of New York that nobody really sees until you go, you know, further along into the neighborhoods and you see kids everywhere you go. But so it took 3 years of me actually wrestling with God to come. Because it was a surrender of my, I guess, my perceived entitlements of space in the South and, you know, a yard and more stuff than we really needed. And then just this fear of losing control of, you know, being so small. One in 8 million people in the span of 11 miles. And so I get to New York and my life just starts to train wreck. Within 4 months, I started having panic attacks. And that would, you know, so basically I had them on trains, elevators, subways, and crowds. Have you guys ever been to New York? It's really impossible to avoid these things. And I would have a hard time just getting on a subway for 2 stops to my kids' school. Like, they would do something for chapel. And there was one time in the winter I had Starbucks and a scarf and a coat. And as the doors are shutting on a train, like a subway, you cannot reopen them, but I tried. So I threw everything on the ground, and I'm just, like, clawing it open. And people are backing away, like, she's going to blow. And I was just like, it got to where I would really just whisper the name of Jesus, just get me to the next stop. I know I'm not going to die, but a panic attack feels, if any one of you have had one, it feels like you're going to die if you don't escape. Yeah. Yeah. And so that literally went for about 18 months. And I began to fear that that was my new normal.
What was Gabe thinking as he watched you going?
That's a great question. I think he's thinking, what in the world is happening? You know, and it was really beautiful. He was such a steady calm. And he would just pray for me, and he would listen. And I think there was some part of him that said, am I making New York an idol? Yeah. To the point that this is debilitating our family, because God wouldn't call us somewhere that would then make, you know, our family wither or suffer. So it really got to the second year in where he's like, we don't need to stay. Like, this doesn't have to be our thing. I thought this is what we were being led towards, but if this is something that's, you know, you're losing your mind in some ways, like, we'll do whatever we have to do. And so just him surrendering that, I think, was a huge moment for us. Because there was a side of me that wanted to kind of blame somebody. You know, the blame. Mm-hmm. So resentment could have easily crept in that moment, just saying, well, you're the one that brought us here. You know, look at me. I can't breathe. And I'm having panic attacks.
But the fact that he would give it all up for you and your health.
Because then I kind of wanted at that point to go, is there something that God is working out in me that wouldn't have come out? Like, when stress or anything that's stressful in your life, when it squeezes you, what is so deep in there that has no choice but to come out? And I don't know that I would have reached the desperation for God in Atlanta or in the South or in the comfort that I knew. I call myself a Christian, you know, since I was 5. I asked Christ into my life and my heart, but I never had known like what it meant to just utterly depend on him for survival, mm-hmm. for strength, for like the middle of the night lament where I'm just crying out. Like, and so what happened is September 20th of 2011, after Gabe says, we can leave, we don't have to stay, let's make plans to go back next summer. So we'd already kind of gone down that road of at least talking about it. And at the same point, I'm meeting with four girls every Tuesday for that whole time, and they always would say, how's your panic? And I'd always say, like, it's the same, you know, it's like withering. Mm-hmm. Something about relapse is you fear that you'll never change. And so that's when despair can creep in. And I had almost lost faith for myself. I just didn't know anything different. And they laid hands and prayed on me. And that night, other friends were praying for me. And I remember specifically on September 20th of 2011, waking up at 3 a.m. like I did so many times before. And I couldn't speak because in a panic attack, everything's heightened and you're just like, and I would just grasp his arm and Gabe just started praying like he always did. And finally I found my voice and I said, rescue me. Mm-hmm. I said, deliver me. I cannot do this without you. And in a moment, my body just broke, literally broke on the bed and stopped. And I just laid there and nothing, it was almost like a paralyzation. It was like, I was just like this and my eyes are the only thing moving in the dark. And I was like, did you see that? And Gabe just said, you stopped. And I grew up Fundamental Baptist, so I didn't really understand like what this meant. Was this healing? How does that, what does that look like? I'm sorry guys, like I just didn't, there was no book, like textbook framework for me. So what happened though is the weeks that followed, I began to walk the streets of New York and the scales were lifted from my eyes and I began to see brokenness in people all around me. And I started studying anxiety and depression and I learned that one in four women are on anti-anxiety, antidepressants medication, which is 400 times what it was in 1988. It's a new day, it's an epidemic. 20% of Americans, 47 million people suffer from this, $47 billion are spent annually on this, and it's just increasing. I keep reading articles all the time. And I think I started reading the work of Viktor Frankl, and he wrote Man's Search for Meaning, and he basically talks about, he's a Holocaust survivor, and he talks about suffering, and he says that his premise is that the root of anxiety is unfulfilled responsibility, mm-hmm. which basically means you know you're made for something and you're not doing it. And for me in my life in that season that I looked to New York to like give me meaning and give me purpose because there was this angst that said, did you create me for more? Did you imagine something for my hands? Like when you knit me in my mother's womb, what did you put in me? What was the DNA? What did you imagine when my frame was not hidden from you, when I was made in that secret place? Like what is your intention for me? And so I really started to unpack the calling, what calling looks like for women, because I think often women get lost in the roles and we confuse our roles for our calling and actually our roles enhance our calling. So I learned that calling is nothing more than when your talents and your burdens collide. And so talents are those birthright gifts. Like what did God put in you when he knit you in your mother's womb? And what made you come alive when you're 8, 9, and 10 that drove your parents crazy? And I was called Becca Book when I was a kid. I read everything I could get my hands on. We didn't have a TV until I was in like 8th or 9th grade. So my mom was a teacher. And I remember in 4th grade checking out every single Nancy Drew book. So all 62 I read in 1 year. So I didn't know now until later in life, but readers make writers. And so I had always learned about life through the power of a written story. So it made sense that here I am, you know, 33, my mom's like, hey, I always thought you'd write. And I was like, I've never heard this before. This would have been really helpful at Liberty when I was picking a major. So even just like waking to that gifting of writing, but that wasn't enough. I think there's another part of calling that we often miss. Like it's one thing to waken to what it is that you're wired for, what you're suited for, what you're gifted at. The part that people aren't really prepared for is the burden. So calling is when your talents and your burdens collide. Burden is informed by the story you've lived, the journey you've walked, the life you've walked, the family you've been born into, the things that have broken your heart. Burden is what keeps you up at night. Burden is what makes you weep. And when you start deploying the giftings that God's knit in you, for the things that make you weep, therein lies calling. And I believe that calling is for everyone, male mm-hmm. and female. I believe that if we are just sitting at his feet and we say, God, what are you doing? Where's your hand moving in the world? And just put me to work. Like, just give me your marching orders, and you know what part of the body I'm supposed to be, so show me what that is, and make the need great right in front of me so that I can just be fully present with whatever it is that you've put right there. And so that's kind of what I'm doing. I think burden for me is mental illness. It's something that we're all seeing. Burden for me is women waking to the giftings God's putting in their heart and to see that the calling is beautiful. And in order to have a calling, you must have a caller. It's not something, we're not trying to make a name for ourselves. This isn't like a big indulgent conversation. No, this is an act of obedience to say, you are the Father on the throne. I am your inheritance. I am your heir. You have set me free. Like, I want to walk in fullness of life in whatever you put in front of me. And I think that brings him glory.
My secretary, my assistant, Carol, is a great editor, great writer, reader herself. She said that your book carried her. Mm. So obviously you found something. Mm. And do you think that as the viewers, if they read the story, do you think what you're... And there's just a flow of God coming out of you. This is not... This is supernatural, what's happening. So, but do you feel like that they'll start tracking with what God led you supernaturally to put down?
Yes. I mean, it was such a cathartic process. I mean, it was so painful. I wept writing the whole thing because it was like I really understood God's love and intention. And the beauty of this is God is that creative. His imagination is that vast so that we don't have to copy or compete or compare. We all have our own journeys. We have our own stories, our own lives we've walked, and we have our own wiring. And don't we just celebrate in the fact that God knit us with such intention, that he has such purpose and plans for us? I don't want anyone to look like me. That would be annoying. That would be, having two Rebeccas walking around would be obnoxious. Let's be honest. But that, I think God's saying, no, like, you are all my people. You are my holy people who I love. You are the salt of the earth, the light of the world, a city on a hill that cannot be hidden. I need all of you. Like, you're it.
And
you,
most of the
I need
time,
all of you.
It's right where they are.
Right.
In other words, you don't have to quit doing where
right.
God has put you.
Right.
You're a mother.
Right.
You're a homemaker.
Absolutely.
But that calling can still be effective.
The Good Samaritan went right on back to work. Mm-hmm. He didn't buy a tent and start a healing ministry.
Yeah.
Okay? You know, okay, he went back to work, but he still cared. And this whole, she's still mothering. She didn't give up the kids. Now I'm a writer. I don't have kids anymore. It's so much bigger. And listen to me, you've got to know, you have to understand how absolutely important you are to expressing the heart and life of God.
Yeah.
And I pray you see that. You can get the book in the bookstores online. I'll send it to you today. We'll send it to you. Becca, we really love putting God's arms around hurting people.
Amen.
And that's what our viewers enable us to do. I want to show you how you can do it. Would you just like to say thanks to God and thanks to Rebecca? And Gabe, since you're not here. She better than you. We got to turn this girl loose. We the family. I mean, really and truly, this river's got to flow. And we don't know how exactly, but we got to see how. Because this woman is really special. And it's really magnificent. And Gabe, thanks, because you're really an instrument. I love you, buddy. And proud of you. I'm so proud of this beautiful Jesus and this beautiful girl and you. So may God bless you and Q and all you do. And may God heal his family. Like I told you earlier, the most perfect father has the most dysfunctional family. Something's got to get fixed. And this is part of the fixing process. Now, look, I promise you, it excites Jesus to say to his father, Dad, we're going to put your arms around a lot of people. That's what you're going to do right now. Well, I want you to watch closely because I'm telling you, you're the one that touches like Rebecca was touched. You can touch these hurts, and heal them.
Right now, Angola is experiencing one of the worst droughts in years, destroying crops and impacting the lives of nearly 2 million people. As a result, over 100,000 children under the age of 5 are suffering with severe malnutrition. One of those children is named Elena. She's almost 2 years old, but she only weighs 18 pounds. Elena's mother, Rosalina, came to a malnutrition clinic desperate for her daughter to be healed. Elena's skin disease can be a fatal symptom of malnutrition. When a child is not getting enough food, the lack of protein results in large, painful lesions all over the body. If treated early enough, the skin lesions can be healed. But the long-term effects of malnutrition will be with a child for the rest of their lives. The cure for malnutrition is simply food. A daily bowl of food will keep children out of the malnutrition clinics and give them the life they deserve. That's the miracle of mission feeding.
Boy, when I look at those, what I saw for so many years, skin ulcers, and realize that all we had to do to correct it was give them something to eat, and you know, you're thinking about give these kids a chance. They don't define chance as an entertainment center or a park. These kids can have more fun with a rock than our kids can have with a game box or some video game. One of our best friends just came back from Africa. He went to where we've been feeding, and we've been saving kids for 25 years. And some of the older people now grown tell us about how a lot of them went through college now, and they're teachers themselves. But they had a bunch of these kids, Betty, and they were kicking around a plastic bag they aired up, they didn't have to play with. And they had brought a soccer ball, and they threw it out. He said, I saw several hundred kids go crazy if they could kick a ball. He said, I've never seen kids so happy. So when we show you these desperate kids and these mothers, and these kids are fighting just for a breath, and we talk about hope, we're not talking about giving them an iPhone. We're talking about giving them life and showing them love. And yes, it's in my heart to see the whole continent of Africa changed and the resources there developed for the world, but the great resources of the people. So I'm asking you, please, save those kids' lives. Give them food, be an answer to the mother's prayer, be the healing hands of Jesus, and give them something to eat. And give them what to them is the greatest joy of all, that they might have a family and a baby to love, because that's their biggest joy. So I want you to dial the number, take your bank card and use it like a check, make the biggest gift you can. We've got kids right now that are facing death in Angola, the very place where you saw those malnutrition clinics, but I'm talking about out in the bush where the crops have failed. We need a miracle. I'm praying God will raise up 1,000 people to give $1,000, because with $1,000 we can feed 100 kids, save their lives. And we got 100,000 that are desperate right now because of a drought. We got 400,000 that we've located that we're feeding, and we need to continue that to turn it around. And so what I'm asking you to do now is I'm asking you to respond to the love of God, but I'm asking you to take advantage of the love of God expressed through some of our friends who know the need is so great in drought-stricken Angola and other places, and the children are dying because they didn't have a food line, and the missionaries have found the place to feed them to stop this process, but we need the food. And some of our wonderful friends said, well, we'll give a matching gift of $1.5 million. That's how desperate it is, and we'll do it. But we want to ask everyone who's watching to give the largest gift they can. We'll match it. Father, I pray everybody watching will reach out and be the hands of Jesus today. I'm asking you to. Touch their hearts, God, so they express your heart. In Jesus' name, dial that number. If you get a busy, you be determined. I'm getting through because I'm going to do what God told me to do. I'm going to see those children have hope. And you make the gift, or you can go to lifetoday.org, make the gift God put in your heart. We've got some gifts to bless you because we love to bless you, spiritually to feed you. And so we'll say thank you. But boy, you're going to be the miracle some mother's praying for, some child, some young person, some family needs. Thanks for making the call. Thanks for right now doing it and going online. I bless you for it.
In remote and impoverished areas of Africa, families are suffering, facing death by starvation, and those hit the hardest are their children. Life's Mission Feeding Program is there, able to feed and care for over 400,000 children in crisis areas of Angola, Mozambique, and Sudan. With all of our previous reserves gone and Angola facing its worst drought and food shortage in 20 years, we need to immediately replenish our funding and supplies for our feeding programs. As an answer to prayer, a group of Life's Friends have set a $1.5 million matching gift challenge for Mission Feeding. This means your gift today can have a double impact. $30 to help feed three children will be double to impact six children. $50 to help feed five children will be double to help save 10 children. $100 for 10 children will be double to help feed 20 children. And $300 for 30 children will be double to help feed and minister to 60 children. With your gift of any amount, we'll send you All Things New, a daily devotional with an inspirational music CD. With your double impact gift of $100 or more, please request the NIV Larger Print Reference Bible. Finally, please consider a double impact gift of $1,000 and request our commemorative glass sculpture, The Blessing. Please call, write, or go online today and make your gift of life to help feed and care for hungry children.
I pray with all my heart that you'll be the blessing. We want to say thank you. Send the gift to help us feed 100 kids or however many you can. But we need a lot of help. We'll send you this book, Free Fall to Fly. I'm telling you what, I believe God's all over it. And I thank you for listening. Aren't you glad you did? Would you like to say thanks to Rebecca? Rebecca, I love you. Thank you. We saw Jesus flowing like a river. We really did. Just a river. A river of love. That river, God wants to flow that river of love and life through you. Love you.
But that woundedness from those early years still remained, and I had to work that through. I didn't hate my dad, but I was hurt by my dad.
Author Emerson Eckeridge, tomorrow. Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of Life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.